Okay, good evening. I'd like to call the Wednesday, March 6, 2024 meeting of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District to order. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Linda Austin?
Here.
Director Karen Ray Ressam?
You all join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you very much. Brings us to agenda review. Is there anything?
I'm good.
You're good? Okay, I'm good. So we'll move on. Public comment for items not appearing on the agenda. I see no public in the audience, so we'll move on to our consent agenda. We have items 5A and 5B, approval of warrants in the meeting minutes of February 7th, 2024. Is there any questions or comments on the
Neither.
Consent agenda? I have none. I'll entertain a motion or open up for public comment. Seeing no one in the audience, I'll entertain a motion.
I will move that we approve items 5A and 5B as published.
Thank you. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. That moves us on now to item number 6A, the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project update. So I'll turn it over to our
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. This is the quarterly update for the district's redundancy project. And this evening I have Ms. Eileen Shields with MKN, who will be providing the update to your board.
All right. Thank you. Welcome, Eileen.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Eileen Shields with MKN. I have been serving as the district's project manager and an extension of staff for this wastewater treatment plant redundancy project. As you know, it's one of the largest CIPs the district's undertaken. And on July 10th of 2023, damage to the new secondary clarifier, or SC2 floor slab, was discovered. We've been providing regular updates to your board since August on the progress of that issue. The issue will have schedule and budget impacts, which we've been working to understand, and we don't fully understand the extent of them yet. The project team worked together to develop the best path forward for repair of this project, of the SC2 slab, in order to get the project back where it was completed, commissioned, and in service for the district. This fall, we worked with SSG structural engineers to provide detailed review of the design of the repair, which was being performed by the project design engineer, Kennedy Jenks. There were several rounds of comments and review, and KJ addressed those comments. The final design for that repair was provided to Feilance on February 5th. Of this year, and Feilance is currently working on a quote and schedule update, which will include the full project schedule. So at that time, district staff and MKM will have a better understanding of the schedule and cost impacts and can provide that update to your board. At this time, there's still no indication that the district will be responsible for the additional cost for the repair or the investigations or delays to the redundancy project. So with that, this quarterly update covers the months of October 2023 through January of 2024. The schedule had been delayed by a delay in receipt of critical equipment. If you recall, there was those dissolved oxygen probes and airflow control valves that were putting the project behind schedule last spring. But it, of course, it's further delayed due to this SC2 damage. So this schedule summary provides a quick look at that, and it was drafted through February 26th. At that time, we were about 223 days behind the contract completion date, which was July 18th, 2023. The last schedule update we have from the contractor was from January 1st, and that had indicated a completion on May 22nd of 2024. It assumed the SC2 repair work would begin on December 28th, 2023, which that hasn't happened yet. They didn't have the final design plans yet, so they had done some work to get it started, but they couldn't really dig in. So we're anxiously awaiting that updated schedule so we can see what the impacts will be. The budget summary included in the staff report was drafted on February 26th. Based on invoices received and cost incurred to date and approved change orders. To date, we have a little over $725,000 in contract changes, representing about 2.7% of the original contract award. The current contract is about $27.6 million, and the contract earnings to date are just about 98%, or a little over $27 million currently. We had a few change orders issued between October and January, primarily, namely in November and December. Change order 18 was issued to cover the cost to the contractor for removal of the grout in secondary clarifier 2. So that was required to really get a good understanding of what the structural damage to the slab was. The work was conducted on a time and materials basis, and the cost totaled just over $101,000. Change order 19 was issued in November, and that was to cover costs associated with reinstalling a portion of the dewatering system, which is required to complete the repairs for secondary clarifier 2. So this covers the equipment and piping needed, and that was about $156,000. And then change order 20 was not associated with secondary clarifier 2, but it was added to incorporate the cost to replace the centrifuge conductor. It was previously approved per a work change directive. The total cost of the change order is just under $24,000. So that was all done on a time and materials basis. The next table is a summary of the overall project budget, which summarizes the construction bid price plus change orders 1 through 20. Subtotal current construction costs, $27.6 million. And we show a spent to date, a balance to finish of just under $650,000 for construction. We have a little over $1.5 million for in construction contingency left in the project budget. We had a little under $200,000 in other construction costs. Those were PG&E fees and fees for hooking up to the OCSD water line for the fire service, a couple other items. So our subtotal of construction, $29.4 million, and our balance to finish, including the construction contingency, is a little more than $2.2 million. Professional services budget, just under $8 million. We've utilized the professional services contingency that we had started with, so there's no contingency left for specifically for professional services. There's about $950,000 left in the professional services budget. So in total, the project budget remains at $37.4 million, including that construction contingency. We have just under $3.2 million remaining in the balance. So I mentioned we don't know the full impact of the budget for secondary clarifier 2, but the district and MCAN have been working to track those known costs and develop placeholders for costs that we know are coming and we don't understand yet. And again, as soon as we get that quote from Phelance, we'll be able to report that. There's usually some back and forth with the construction management, MKN, the district, and Kennedy Jenks with the contractor on that change order before they're finalized. but we'll be able to report that to the board once that's finalized. So often I go through the summary of work. I'm going to kind of skim through and just hit the high points. So there's a lot of site work and fine grading, flood walls, some of the finish work that was needed on the original contract, working on electrical and controls parameters, some work on the primary clarifier number one occurred in October. They were able to isolate primary clarifier one and replace the mechanism. That started in October, and I believe it was completed in December, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah. So if you call it, that was the primary clarifier that was damaged during electrical outage. It took some time to get that new equipment to the site. And so that work was finally completed. I think they have a little bit of touch-up work that they were finishing up. I don't know if that got done last week. We've been talking about it, but trying to work between the rains and such. So they have some coating to touch up on some of the bolts. But the mechanism is back in, it's working, and it's in service for the district. So again, through November and December, it was that PC1 work, as well as some of the punch list and site work that needed to be get done. And then in January, Fiance did start some of the work that they could initiate without the full design plans for SC2. So we did work as a team to try and figure out some of those items that they could get going on. So they removed the mechanism in secondary clarifier 2, which needs to come out in order to repair the floor. That was done, and then it looks like the rest of it was some electrical instrumentation and punch list items. So that will continue in the coming months. The demolition for SC2, that should be initiated relatively soon. We've had a couple of rounds of change orders, reviews, comments, and them addressing that. We expect to have that final change order from Fiance hopefully this week, maybe early next week, and that can get approved so they can start that work and get moving. I've attached photos through October, November, and December. The executive summaries from M&S, who's the construction manager, are attached for those months. And then I apologize, the second attachment, attachment two, was incorrect. It should have been a table. It's usually a detailed summary of the project budget status, including all the construction and professional services costs. And a different attachment that goes to a different staff report was attached inadvertently. So I provided a hard copy. The print is very, very small. I'm sorry about that. We'll get a copy emailed to you so you can view it on your screens. And if you want a hard copy with larger print, we can get that to you as well. So that concludes my update. Happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you very much. I think, do you have any questions?
I do.
Yeah. Go ahead.
My questions have to do with the change orders. So what I heard you say, which I didn't really put together when I read this before, was that change order, maybe I didn't hear this right. Change orders 18 and 19 had to do with the problem at the secondary clarifier. Change order 20 was something different. So my question is, when I looked at the remaining construction contingency, I kind of had a heart attack because that has changed significantly since the last time we saw this. But it seems to me that there could be something in this report that speaks to how much of this is going to be covered by Kennedy Jenks. And so that's my question, because I didn't see anything in the report for how much of this financial hit is actually going to be backfilled.
Yeah, understood. We're working on that and tracking it separately. What makes it it's a little complicated against this table the way it's written right now. I did include a note on the attachment that you didn't have that identifies change orders 18 and 19. The note says the districts are tracking costs associated with SC2 damage separately. These costs will be billed to Kennedy Jenks. KJ delivered payment number one in the amount of $101,539.42 towards SC2 costs on December 6th. So if you recall, John Wyckoff from KJ came and delivered a check. That was for the amount of change order 18. So they have already paid for that.
So is that accounted for in this table somewhere?
It's not, because I have not been including payments coming in.
Okay, so then maybe my question is really for Jeremy. Because ultimately, that's what the board cares about, is what's this final cost? Yeah. And what we've got here doesn't account for, you know, the public seeing what they're not going to be ending up getting billed for.
Correct. And these are conversations that Ms. Shields and I have had as far as how to maintain the full cost accounting of the project as its entirety. And so that's what you're seeing right now, is that these charges for these change orders are actually hitting the project budget, the overall $37.4 million that the district has budgeted for the project. But we are being reimbursed, and so that 37.4 is actually going to need to go up as we receive those payments from Kennedy Jenks. So we'll have to increase the project budget. But your point's well taken, and this is something that we have talked about, and we do have some other cost accounting and discussions that are more closed door as far as the negotiations on these costs that we'll be able to share with you. But yes, we do intend on capturing that and being able to present that and show it both ways, as you're requesting, that this is basically new revenue from the failure coming into the project, and so the overall project budget will increase. But what you see right now is those costs have hit the contingency portion of the budget, and so you've seen a drawdown on the contingency from, you know, what was $2.8 million, and now, like, as we've issued several of these change orders to keep the project moving forward, as we await these insurance payments from Kennedy Jenks, we're seeing that come down. And we also need to be mindful, we may be coming to your board to increase that budget before we even receive all those payments from Kennedy Jenks Insurance, just to keep the project moving. And that's something we'll want to be able to explain to your board and have you consider, on whether we keep that moving or try some other way to get the revenues sooner rather than later. But usually insurance claims don't work that way, but that's what we've been advocating for from KJ, and their insurance has cooperated to date on making those early payments. But that is not typical on how usually the claim is filed at the end and a reimbursement is made.
And how long does it typically take for that reimbursement to be issued?
I would defer to legal counsel, and I think that would even be a guess on his part on how long those things would take.
Are we talking years? Are we talking months? What are we talking about?
I would hate to speculate given the complexity of the issue. Months would seem to be reasonable given how the parties have been cooperating and working cooperatively.
So I feel like if I'm somebody sitting at home from the public, I want to see something here that's showing that, again, the increased revenue or whatever, because that would go against this. So it should show somewhere in the table what we've at least received. I understand that there's negotiations for future things going on, but these tables are absent. They don't deal with that piece. And from a public perspective, I feel like that needs to be in there somehow. I don't know how we do that, but I feel like it really should show that. I'm concerned as well, as you're saying, you know, that the repair may end up costing more than $1.5 million. And what do we do in that case in terms of, if we're borrowing money, and now we've got an increased cost from that point of view too. So I don't know where we're at if we end up pushing it past this number. Where do we get that money?
So the district would be able to tap into existing district reserves to continue to fund the project. I would have to circle back. We've been spending money pretty quickly this past year, but I'd have to circle back around with Amy. But or do you know, Ms. Simpson, what our reserves are right now? Is it 7 million? So we have around $7 million in district reserves that could be budgeted by your board to continue the project while we wait on that that reimbursement. And we would definitely get more detailed on what we expect that reimbursement to be when we were asking your board that question. And that's why we don't have it here. Is the main thing is we're expecting the quote rather soon on the full repair from the contractor, and that's the biggest portion of the number. And we only have the other, like the dewatering and the demolition work kind of captured right now, so we don't have the bigger ticket item, and so it's a little bit challenging to show what that full amount is. But I think I do understand the ask of the board, and I think we'll prepare it for the next update, and we'll be able to show a more concise and how those costs are coming back into the project.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you. And then on the timing part, I mean, obviously May is not happening. So if I do, you know, back of the napkin math, we're 3 months behind. So that would put that 3 months out. So that would be June, July, August. So maybe August, or would you not even go there? Okay, that was enough of an answer right there.
If I had to guess, I'm thinking it's going to be somewhere late summer, fall, before the repair could be completed at the earliest. But I don't know. There's a lot that goes into that construction schedule. And so until we see that updated schedule and we're able to compare it to the old one, and M&S actually has a schedule analyst that's been tracking it and making sure there's nothing quirky going on with the different tasks, it's hard to say. So, you know, I don't even know that May date would have been accurate. It's just the last we had from the contractor.
So why, the way you presented it, and I may be reading too much into the way you presented it about why we are anxiously awaiting documents, why is this taking so long?
I think there's a lot that goes into preparing that quote for the repair. So Phelan's received the final design early February. So they're working with a specialty contractor, Keller, for the micropiles. The design includes, you know, demolition, installing micropiles, which are kind of like soil nails to hold back a retaining wall. If you think about it in the vertical here, we're dealing with it in the horizontal plane because of groundwater uplift. So they're working to get quotes from Keller and their demolition subcontractor. So that takes a couple weeks. Then they have some back and forth, and then they're preparing the final quote. So, 4 weeks on something of this magnitude, I don't think it's unreasonable.
Okay.
And then the demolition, we had released what we could early, so we pulled apart the package, made sure everybody was okay with that on the design and the review side, sent that early. That had some back and forth. You know, that went over to them in January. I don't have it here specifically, but it does take some time.
Okay, as long as you're comfortable with it, you know, that's, I suppose that's okay, but you don't seem very comfortable right now.
I want to know what the impact is so we can continue planning. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, that's my questions.
Yeah. So just to verify, the final design is done.
Yes.
And we're in the process of the construction bids to do the repairs. Is that what?
Getting a quote from the contractor.
The quote for the contract that we don't
have. That we already have under contract. Yeah. So it's not going out to bid, but it's Phelan's who's been doing the construction for the redundancy project this entire time.
So Phelan's will be doing the repair.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's it. And then that's all I have.
Thank you.
So is there public comment? There is no public in the room. So with that, thank you very much, Ms. Shields. and we will receive and file this report. Thank you, Jeremy. Item 6B, we will authorize execution of a contract amendment number 9 for the redundancy project construction phase design engineering services with Kennedy Jinks Consultants pending USDA concurrence.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. The item before you is a request to authorize the execution of contract amendment number 9 for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project construction phase design engineering services with Kennedy Jinks Consultants pending USDA concurrence. That last portion is USDA approves all of these just as an administrative process, but they don't do that until your board has taken action. So the item before you is an amendment for Kennedy Jinks, and if you recall, there's been a number of amendments for the consultant services in regards to the overrun because of the SC2 clarifier. One thing that's important to note about this is Kennedy Jinks, the designer that was actually responsible for the flaw in the design that that caused the failure. And so this amendment does not include any costs associated with the secondary clarifier number 2 because they are absorbing those internally. But there are other costs associated with continuing to deliver the project that they need to be paid for costs not associated with SC2, some of the startup services with as far as the process, working with Michael and staff to communicate that. There's money in there for those type of model runs that we're discovering we need to start up the facility. Some of it's for RFIs, requests for information, as the contractor's not finished yet. They've spent that budget, but these aren't, the thing I want to stress is they have not put any SC2 repair dollars toward this. So this amount, this $50,974, is intended to complete construction and with the engineering services with Kennedy Jinks.
Do you have any questions?
No.
Is there any public comment? I don't have any questions. No public comment. So, you want to make a motion?
Yes. Sorry, I fast-forwarded to the end of it. I will move that we authorize execution of contract amendment number 9 for wastewater treatment plant redundancy project construction phase design engineering services with Kennedy Jinks Consultants, pending USDA occurrence in the amount of $50,974.
All right, I'll second that. You want to do a roll call, please? Amy?
Director Linda Austin?
Yes.
Director Karen Ray Russom?
Yes.
Okay. That takes us now to the District Administrator and Plant Operations Report.
Where's Michael?
So Mr. Jones is currently in Australia with his partner and newborn son. So they are on the other
side of the globe.
Side of the globe, yeah, where the toilets swirl the other direction. He's already sent me a video to confirm.
Is that really true?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's called the Coriolis effect. Yeah. The southern hemisphere, the rotation of tornadoes, hurricanes, toilets flushing are all the other direction.
That is, I've never heard that.
So
that was a wives' tale.
I'll be given both the administrator's report and the plant operations report this evening. On capital projects, the redundancy project, we provided the quarterly update this evening. Some cogeneration project update. We hosted a design field meeting with Southland. That's PG&E's subsidiary, third-party consultant for doing these type of projects, and MKN, the district's engineer on the project. And the design work is just now getting started and is in the early stage. And so if you recall, the cogeneration project is a project that the district has undertaken to capture biogas that our digesters produce and produce electricity. The power will offset the majority of the district's energy needs and all of our heating needs for, we heat our digesters, and so this, we can burn this gas to heat, both heat the digesters and generate electricity. So that's the project that is underway right now that we'll be continuing to update your board as the project progresses. Some miscellaneous items. We continue to handle the winter rains without any issues. There's been no spills or damage to either existing facilities or the construction work as a result of the winter storms. Lopez Lake has been spilling since February 7th and continues to spill. That adds water to the AG Creek that runs behind the plant through the levee system. No plant tours and some tentative items, so that at the April 3rd meeting we'll be presenting a mid-year budget review to your board.
Can I ask you a quick question before
sure.
you go on? Can you just refresh my memory what the timing is on that cogeneration thing?
So the cogeneration, we've got about 12 months left, I think, on the design effort, and there are some dates where we want to for some tax incentives for energy projects that we want to try to hit, and I don't have those dates in front of me, but there are some, we have room, but there are some dates we're going to try to hit.
Thank you.
So plant operations report, all the numbers at the plant, there were no violations during the reporting period. I don't know that I'm going to read through every one of the operation and maintenance tasks that they did, but I will jump down and do some of the work orders. So they performed loader preventative maintenance, replaced heating and air conditioning air filter, performed algae control on all the clarifiers, inspected the digester vacuum pressure relief valves, deragged the primary sludge pumps, performed water champ preventative maintenance. The water champ is just a mixer. It's like a blender that's in the chlorine contact tank that mixes the chlorine in. So that's the water champ when Michael refers to that. So perform junction box preventative maintenance, test ran emergency generators and emergency bypass pump, perform 6-inch trash pump preventative maintenance, perform forklift maintenance, and then perform fixed film reactor distributive drive maintenance. No staff training during the reporting period, and some call outs. So on February 1st, the high inlet ORP alarm, this is an alarm that we enabled to when we were having some high chlorine levels in our disinfection system. And so we're still trying to get that thing tuned in. It's letting us know a little bit too often when it's starting to get, but we wanted it to do that so that we didn't risk any type of violations for having too much chlorine in the water when it went out to the ocean. So staff responds when that starts to get a little bit high and makes adjustments if needed. February 5th, the motion alarm, operations staff responded and inspected the maintenance building. There are no signs of entry. Motion alarm may have been from rodent, insect, or bird. Often they get trapped, birds get trapped in the maintenance building and are flying around and will set off the alarm. On February 9th, there was a power failure. Operations staff responded and verified operation on emergency generator. Both utility power failures were due to ongoing repairs being made by PG&E to extensive damage from this severe storm event. All plant operations returned to normal following the restoration of power to the treatment facility. And there were some pictures in this staff report. So the first one is a picture of Bragg Crane setting our repaired centrifuge auger. Actually, both of those first two pictures are that. And then this is inside that, it's the other side of the auger inside the building is the third picture, and that's Justin Music and Nick Kurikawa, two of the operators at the plant. And then the next picture is, those are our Duperron screens. They are, that's the kind of the first stage of treatment at the facility. Those those screens kind of grab all the solids that are coming into the plant, so like flushable wipes that aren't really flushable. When those get introduced to the system, this Duperron screen system, it does a good job at removing those without fouling and saves the operators a lot of work. Next picture is operator Chris Rigoni. He's adjusting some, we had a small area, a new sod put in, and we had some junction boxes that weren't exactly level with grade, and so Mr. Rigoni decided that he wanted it to look a little nicer and is dropping those lids a couple inches to make it match the turf. And the last picture is just a picture of the operators, and that's Nick Kurikawa in the foreground and Chris Rigoni holding the green box there, and Justin Music just standing there smiling at the camera, I suppose. And that completes the plant operations report, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you. I don't have any questions.
I have a quick one. So on the deragging.
Yeah.
So I've had this conversation with so many people, like there's no such thing as a flushable wipe. But my question to you is, and I never thought about it until just now, are there other wastewater treatment plants that are set up to derag automatically that somehow others are able to do this in a more automatic way? Or is this something that, no joke, I can reach out to Senator Laird or Assemblymember Addis and we need to get some legislation that these things get banned because they shouldn't be in our system?
So I would say that our facility has actually done the most appropriate retrofits, like those Duperron screens that I referred to. That is the technology that agencies use to try to deal with this issue, and that is why the district installed those in 2015, was because of this ragging issue. And those rags they cause issues with the pump. They're poly, they're plastic, they're not fabric, they're not paper material, right? So they don't dissolve, and so it's one continuous thread, and so you can imagine like fine fishing line, and so you have pumps that are rotating, and so that it'll just wind up around and build up over and over again around the shafts of pumps. And then not only that, as it makes it through the system, we have those large digester tanks, and so eventually they all come to settle there if you're not doing a good job at removing them, because they're not coming out of the plant, they're not going out to the ocean, they're all captured at the plant. But we do have to shut those digesters down every 5 to 10 years, depending on how they're operating, and remove all those rags. But yes, there are efforts to get legislation drafted to stop this, you know, specifically the labeling and even the production. But so yeah, reaching out to Senator Laird's office would seem appropriate to try to keep momentum behind those efforts that other agencies are taking to try to deal with that.
If you could provide me with some information and that I can do that, I'd be happy to do that, because I hate hearing this. Every month we hear this report, and it reminds me, and it just never occurred to me to just really kind of go on the offensive about it.
Yeah, you'll find most wastewater conference, like any 3-day long wastewater conference, one of the technical sessions is going to be on this topic. It's a well-known problem that surprisingly, the industry hasn't really been able to shut that down. You know, the Kimberly Clarks and Procter & Gamble, the folks that are making these products, have been able to prevail to date and continue to produce these.
I mean, that's like saying something sugar-free that has sugar in it.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
It makes me crazy that, I mean, call them wipes, fine, but you can't use the word flushable because they're not.
Right.
And I suppose they are flushable. You can flush them. I mean, I guess maybe that's the problem.
Yeah.
I have the same conversation. Though it says flushable, because I tell everyone, don't, you know, this or these kind you can.
Yeah.
So I think it's an excellent idea. You should get into that for sure.
Thank you for the report.
Okay. No public comment. There's no public. So that brings us now to our board member communications.
I have one small thing. I am unable to be here on April 3rd. I hope that my alternate will be able to be here, so I hope that we don't end up short, but I just wanted to give you notice because I do know for a fact that I'm unable to attend on that night.
Okay. That brings us to our closed session.
Yes, the board now will adjourn to closed session to discuss anticipated litigation pursuant to Government Code 54956.9D4, one case.
Okay, we'll adjourn now to closed session. Thank you.